So, I'm afraid we've come to the end, my friend.
This is the end, beautiful end, the end.
I found myself saying over the last couple of years, like, I'd rather just know. If the apocalypse is coming, I would rather know so I can just party my ass off and just sit on the edge of a cliff and watch it all burn.
I think a lot of people have been prepping pretty hard for a while. And I think our national obsession with apocalyptic narratives has reached a new peak in the past couple decades, kind of like it was in the 50s. Well, and interesting now, Fallout just came out, which is kind of a fifth, a neo-futurist 1950s apocalypse, which kind of synthesizes our own obsessions with the end of all things. But especially for that, whatever, decade or so where The Walking Dead was like the biggest show on television. And I think still is in the top three or something. It was like, oh, we're fascinated. We're trying to figure it out. I know that film Civil War just came out a couple weeks ago. We are definitely fascinated with all things as we know it, falling apart, coming to an end, in the past 20 or 30 years. And I think for good reason.
Yeah, and that reminds me of one of the seven signs of an empire's end, rather, in an article you sent by Ernest Richard Rugenstein, PhD cultural history from 2017, which feels like actually feels like ancient history and this the pace at which things are moving. So the question we're asking today is this the end of the US Empire? And I am Andy Swindler.
And I am Brendan McNamara. And this is Totally Classic, where every episode we get together to hash things out, hash the kind of things out that people seem divided about. People seem irritated at each other for even discussing. We would like to continually posit that time, attention, intention, curiosity, and love are really all you need to talk about anything. So the end of things as we know it. Yep, that one too.
I feel like we both tend to be, I don't know if you'd call yourself an optimist, but upbeat enough about things and trying to see the best in a lot of areas of life. So at least that's how I enter this conversation. I find myself skeptical at the outset, and not that there aren't massive problems. We could easily spend the entire episode just listing them. Many of which are controversial in terms of their actual magnitude or scope or whatnot. But one person that's been in my field, I don't know, for a couple of years, and I don't really know her personally, but Margaret Wheatley or Meg Wheatley has a book out on the subject, and I haven't read the book yet, but I've seen her speak a couple of times, and she just is adamant that in all of her rather prolific life. I respect her as a, I don't know how she'd even quite describe herself, but certainly a leadership, coach and consultant. And she has this term. It's come up before. Maybe I can't remember if we talked about it on the show, but at least offline about these islands of sanity. And I don't love that framing because to me, built into that is an immediate idea that we know what sane is and what is not sane. And ostensibly that we are sane and the other people are not sane. Like we're going to go build this island, which immediately dictates that everybody who's not on our little island is not sane.
Well, and it makes the ocean, which is a primordial symbol of chaos, so it makes some sense. But it makes the everything you're surrounded by insanity just by virtue of being an island. Then that landmass is where sanity is, and the entire ocean around you is insane. Which again, I think subjectively we can certainly feel that way sometimes. And in conversation, I've certainly had many conversations with people where I'm like, I feel like I'm talking to a crazy person. And I assume I've been in many conversations where people have thought the same thing about me. So the impression, I think, is quite popular.
And I'm not steeped enough in Meg's work to go deep or let alone criticize it. So that's not necessarily the intention. But I noticed even in just the way Meg has spoken about some, and she's also a cultural researcher, and she has highlighted a few of these as far as I can tell, basically some of the same ideas from this article about signs that we can see in history, because we know other empires have collapsed. And I don't know if we need to spend much time arguing if the US is an empire. It seems like we both agree with that. I have a book on my shelf called How to Hide an Empire. I haven't read it, of course, but at
I mean,
least the
just
title.
even within our own landmass, I think it would be considered an empire. It's so vast. Like, the United States is such a big geographic area that is unified. So in and of itself, even if we weren't involved in overseas imbroglios, then we would still, I think we would still meet the classification just by the breadth of land that is all under one banner.
Yeah, especially if you look at one of those colonial maps that has the North America like twice as big as Africa kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a substantial. I mean, you can imagine though, if someone unified even just like the top one fifth of Africa, like unified that, or if all of Europe was like genuinely unified, and Europe's not even that big. So like that would be a vast, I mean, you look at the size of the Roman Empire geographically versus the size of the US Empire just here in North America, where you're like, all right, I can kind of see. That's a substantial landmass to unify. I mean, so no wonder we're constantly, it's, I mean, we're a strangely unified and fragile empire. I think we are, I mean, to answer the question, I think we are hurtling towards the end of the empire. I think not even in terms purely of overreach, although that's certainly been happening for a long time. I know some of the popular things brought up, things I see a lot is like a focus on public largesse. So like a bigger and bigger government to support more and more, like just fully like supporting its citizens, as opposed to just offering safety while citizens pursue whatever life of destitution or victory that they may. And a lot of people point to the Roman Empire sort of ultimately got so big and they started taking care of so many people that sort of their, in some ways, their wealth, their quote unquote welfare system ultimately destroyed them. I mean, it's why most like socialist democracies, like in whatever the Netherlands or whatever, like Norway, I guess is Denmark, those kind of folks head that way, but it's a pretty small area. So once you get really big and you start handling that many, trying to take care, make a social safety net, so to speak, for that many people, it's just like it's not a sustainable model. It would be like having a family of 12 where one person or two people did everything. Eventually, those people would be like, get out. Sadly, those 12 other 10 people were children. They were 4 years old and they died soon thereafter. I mean, it's a sad story, really, to consider it. And the other one being bread and circuses, this whole idea of like, people are so involved with self-entertainment. And we certainly have hit both of those markers. But I actually think the main problem is ideological, because ultimately the thing that binds America is the American dream concept, which is this like, it's even if it's not a melting pot, it's a stew or whatever, but that you anyone can come here, you stick the dash American on the end of your name, you're part of us. The Constitution is kind of our Bible. The founding documents like are kind of the closest thing we have to like a scripture, and we all are like, this is something in this. There's glowing embers of something universally beautiful, and we know in many ways it inspired revolutions across the world, French Revolution probably most distinctly, but the foundational the way that we did it here in this country was inspirational to a lot of people, and I think actually has kind of helped shape the world in some positive ways, in the most fundamental sense. Now, how we've gone about building on top of those ideals, I think has changed the world in a much more mixed bag sort of way. But I think that's what we're arguing about the most in our culture now, where I think there's a, and I think it's intentional. And I don't even mean it in a mean sense. I mean, our constitution is sort of designed to revolt against itself. Like it's intentionally like, hey, at some point we're gonna have to there's gonna be another revolution. So I don't even know if we're headed for a civil war so much as we're headed for like another revolutionary war. And I see that in that like, and a lot of people have highlighted this. There's a definably like distinctly anti-Western, and I would say anti-originalist, anti-American dream philosophy that permeates many influential institutions. So I think in many ways we're an empire that's trying to destroy itself. And in many ways, it's almost like maybe this is why the military industrial complex is churning up so much that they know. I mean, I sometimes wonder this, and this is a little conspiracy theory-ish, but I think sometimes that people, we get involved in wars in this country just as a unifier, because it's universally, if you can start fighting someone else, it brings people together. And I wouldn't think it that strange that people are like, well, all right, if we have to kill 100,000 people over the next 20 years in this region far away from us, if it keeps us from falling apart altogether, which would probably lead to the death of millions, then, you know, they're essentially doing the an ex that experiment where if you can pull this lever and it kills one person on the tracks, or if you don't pull the lever, then the train goes off the tracks and 300 people are killed or whatever. They're kind of, I'm assuming people are conducting those sorts of experiments all the time. But I think ideologically, that's where we're in the gravest danger. And we've talked about that in a lot of our episodes, where we are functioning now where there are cohorts of people who look at themselves as islands of sanity, and that everyone outside of them is insane. And we have a lot of revolutionary propositions on the table that are being accepted pretty quickly, and people are kind of being forced out. So I think we seem to be actively, you're almost yearning for it. I think we're yearning for some sort of either, I think we're yearning for either revolution and rebirth, or we're yearning for, and this one scares me more because it could go really, really bad or really good. I actually think we're yearning for strict authority. I think we're actually yearning for like a revival of the empire. Now, I'm skeptical. I'm hopeful because that could go really well. Or meaning people are like, hey, cut it out. Stop being crazy. Love your neighbor. Let's look at this objectively. Let's zoom out. Let's be compassionate, but let's also like hold on to truth. But like someone to actually kind of really firmly and strongly draw us all together. But we're such a fragmented society. I don't know if that's possible. Or people are going to more and more on both sides of the political aisle embrace authoritarianism to simply impose one view or the other, which we've seen happen from both left on the left and on the right.
Yeah, and I think we see that happening across the world, like authoritarian leaders
Yes. Yeah.
being,
Very popular too. Being pop, like people like it.
right. And I don't know. This is why I think I like journeying in the subconscious realm so much, because seems to me a lot of the folks who are in some ways re revolting against it or protesting against it are also feeding it and maybe asking for it in other ways. And yeah, I don't know. This comes on the heels of us talking about Trump derangement syndrome, and as you said, we've talked about a lot of these ideas in the past. One idea we've also talked about that I don't think we need to go deep into, but maybe just a name in case this is like the only episode anybody ever listens to, is we're very aware that this country was founded as a slave state and amidst all kinds of human atrocities, and we've talked at length about sort of what parts of those do or don't still exist. So I want to mention that. Feels a little CYAE. It makes me think of that phrase we came up with in college: "War is about numbers."
Yeah. So you can subdivide that shit. I think that's
Yeah.
really mostly people do. I mean, sort of funk keeping an empire functioning. Yeah, but I think there's a lot of people who want the empire to fall. I think there are many. I mean, this is something we're dealing with, like with the protests across the country right now. I think it is about there's an anti-war sentiment that's very popular. That's kind of a virulent strain amongst what we're looking at protest-wise, and I'm all for that. But there is also there's an anti-Western, anti-US, anti sort of, I would put it in quotes because it's sometimes true and sometimes inaccurate, but like anti-imperialist strain. But at least ideologically, a lot of it does seem steeped in this sort of idea that ultimately we need to tear things down to, I don't know, not even the bones really, past the bones. We need to tear everything down and kind of start over again because everything is so systemically corrupt from its conception, which is of course true. But I would say it's of course true of every single organization that human beings have ever embarked in. So it's that's unavoidable. That's like, to me, that's original sin. That's like our sin nature. Our brokenness is always
Right,
There's
because it's in us.
there's never been a perfect nation founded on Earth. There's blood soak. Every constitution on Earth has some blood on its pages. That's just how humans work, function, man.
I know, and it's but I'm sure I've talked about it. It's been a part of my awakening and sadness is you know, I had spent years searching for what I call the perfect revolution, and like, oh, you know, that doesn't exist. I actually just heard on a YouTube video, I haven't fact checked this, but this guy was saying that the Constitution is the longest standing political document.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. It's sort of horrifying to think about. It's not that old.
But I think, I mean, I'm vibing with the idea of, I don't know, some version of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Like, they're with all of our challenges, people crawl through literal fire and shit thousands of miles to get here, you know, from other places. And now part of that is I also think of the US as one of the greatest PR stories of all time. And I think part of it was coming to age through the Industrial Revolution and through the 20th century age of media expansion, you know, sort of perfect timing to master, like to actually build an empire through those means, not just war. Obviously, it's also a war, but not just sort of traditional war, but like through an unbelievably well-tuned propaganda and the ability. I don't know. I'm reminded of, I heard this about Coca-Cola. Like, Coca-Cola is so good at localizing their marketing that people in other countries think that it's a local product. So it's this idea that, yeah, like we don't even it doesn't even have to have a US label on it, really. It's just exporting.
Well, I think that's the thing I actually think Constitution was pretty good at, was identifying and building itself on like a universal impulse that at least was very is it remains appealing to those who don't have power. And most of the human beings in the world don't have power. So it's very appealing to and it still is, it remains revolutionary in that like we are endowed by our creator with certain inalienable rights just by being a human. Like that was not happening in North America before then. That was not happening for thousands of years. There were internal democracies already on soil that was later taken over, but intertribe, like that was like within a tribe, but like from tribe to tribe, unless tribes cohered, it was we're all created equal, and that tribe is created for us to destroy. And that's how most countries or most tribes have functioned. That's not just distinct to like North America. That's around the world. So that part is very, it's a very appealing idea. I don't know how great we do it. I mean, I think we actually do much better than we think we do. That's the funny thing, where like we in the United States are arguing very seriously about things that I think a lot of other nations think is so like we have our heads so far up our liberal ass, you know? I think like gender identity conversations here are a great example where you're like, this is some niche stuff. You guys are like literally like feuding and legally in the streets and online and blah, 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 to try to like somehow like solve and be reasonable and loving to like these teeny groups of people. Just teeny, like it logically, it doesn't make it almost doesn't make any sense for like a functional empire to be like, wait, why are you trying to give you're like desperately trying to give more seats than are necessary at the table to this like just infinitesimally small group of people. But I actually think it's like that again, that shows us like in many ways like how almost overly conscientious we are as a nation.
Yeah, that makes me think if it'd be wonderful in a way that we were so stable and so healthy that we could really sweep out those corners and like really focus on the most like tiny marginalized populations. You know, that to me that sounds dreamy to be so stable and so healthy that it's like, oh, great, let's like really let's take care of everything and everyone. But
And
we're
that's what we're
not.
trying. No, that's what we're
We're like
trying to do.
rotted at the core, so it's like it feels potentially like I don't know, maybe even a form of avoidance to,
It sometimes is, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, it's the thriving aspect. I mean, I don't think the Empire is really going anywhere, honestly. Barring the continual threat for the past whatever 70 something years of nuclear obliteration. I think we might divvy up at some point. I just think we'll change. I think we're due for a change. I think we're due for a fall out of the top 10 kind of a thing. And we're already are, like, as a sort of struggling democracy. And I see that just because of the rise of authoritarianism, where I feel like it became a concern under Trump. I think it got way worse under Biden. So we're heading trajectory. And it was actually pretty bad under Obama and George W. Bush. Really, since the Patriot Act, I've been kind of like, uh-oh. Like, we're not, it's not getting better. It's getting worse, like, and pretty progressively worse. Maybe not in a direct plummeting line, but we're getting weaker as a democracy, and our government's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's not a cogent design. You know, that's like when you come into a company and there's like 20 people working there and 35 people in the executive suite. You're like, oh no. This is either built to scale fast or this is built to die horribly. And I think that does seem like where we're heading. So in some ways, I think that type of the empire, but the rest of the empire, I mean, the like meddling in affairs around the world, it seems to still be really thriving. Like the US is kind of involved in at least two wars and dabbling in multiple others, like another three or four that were kind of like a little too involved in. Two conflicts we're a little too involved in. And it's almost an unprecedented empire too, because you think about empires of the past, which is why we can only sometimes guess at how it's going to plummet, is these are empires untethered by landmass. Like this is England's probably the closest like in like historical precedent where they had from their teeny little island managed to like have an empire that spread around the world. But now with the far more in, like so much increased rapidity of travel, like the American Empire has weird little dots and hubs like all over the world on every continent really, except for China maybe and Russia, you know, except the other basically the big empires. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think civil war is still possible though, as we've talked about a couple times. I mean, to me, abortion seems like the most likely flashpoint now that it's gone to the States, just because function it'll be to me that's the closest thing we can have to what we had pre-Civil War, which was you could have neighbors, literally you could drive, you could step over a line literally in, you know, on the ground where on one side of it you could be enslaved and on the other side of it you could not be enslaved. That's a pretty significant different way of treating human beings. And so if we had that with abortion, we're like, if you step over a line, you can kill a human being anywhere in the gestational process. Or if you step over that line, you can't. And the whole reason you can't kill them is because they're a living human being. I don't know how people are gonna, I don't know how that's gonna work out long term. Just either people will just have enough bread and circuses and enough like cool streaming shows and TikToks and YouTubes that they won't really think about it. And that'll probably be in many ways our saving grace, except it'll just allow the government to take more and more power. And eventually the empire will just be like an authoritarian dream for some, nightmare for others.
But we'll be in the Oasis or the Matrix, or, nobody will
Yeah,
really
exactly.
notice
So
or
we're
care at
fine.
that point.
Yep. We'll just be, there'll be some sort of liquid sludge that's put straight into our IVs and
It tastes
we'll still
great.
be, yeah, we'll still be alive.
Well,
It's
you
pretty.
mentioned a number of things. One, just the flow of wealth and power. I mean, that's
Yeah.
one thing to track. There are a variety of researchers that are, as far as I can tell, somewhat controversial, but the ones that actually point to how things are getting better,
Yeah.
Steven Pinker is one of them. And I know this feels strange to, I don't know, to generalize anything about 8 billion people just feels like a strange thing to do. At least, and I've seen this before, at least from the World Bank, which you can tell me whether or not they're a reliable source, but the idea that in 1990, 1.9 billion people lived in extreme poverty, 36% of the world's population. By 2019, this number had fallen to 9.2%, about 703 million people.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It's
I mean,
amazing.
that's
That's.
the that's we can and we could use that too, I think, generally. Like we could use a reminder of not just good news, but I think it's, the problem is those numbers are so big and it's so abstract. I think it's hard for people to suck in sometimes the good news of, in many ways, that, like, for all the flaws, that the experiment is working in a lot
Well,
of
and
ways.
it's incremental, right? So this,
Yep.
I don't even think I knew there was a difference between abolitionists and incrementalists in abortion before you mentioned it,
Yeah.
but understandably, especially if somebody's in poverty or deeply marginalized, hard for me to ask them to be patient.
Yeah.
And yet, yeah, you look at this in one generation, something could swing that
Yeah.
much.
Well, our aim is never to have no poor people. I don't think that's a rational aim, because some people want to be poor. Some people want to be marginalized. Some people want to be on the outside. There will always be people who want to have little. And let's be honest, there's also people who will never be able to accrue enough focused energy to thrive. That's intellectual, that's alchemical, that's personality based, that's just whatever skills you're born with. Some people are born with no bow hunting skills, no arrow skills, no, like, just people are born unskilled. I mean, everyone's born unskilled, but some people just don't even have a propensity to gain skills. So there will always be those who are productive and more and less productive members of society, no matter what economic system you're in. So there will always be those who have less or have more of somebody else's something, oh, functionally. But to reduce is a good sign, because we know how all economic systems work, capitalist, communist, whatever. People get edged out, shoved out, and kind of lose by virtue of basically losing to big whales. You know what I mean? You're like the medium-sized fish, and if a whale wants to come in and depose you. Now, in some ways, that could be a suggestion of, again, you just didn't have the skills to survive in that particular environment, and that's kind of how life functions. But there are many machinations of those with power that I would say verge on, if don't completely trespass into the realms of the criminal and immoral. And ultimately, I would love our any system we build to protect those who are immorally subjugated.
Yeah, I have direct interpersonal evidence that of the some people want to be poor, and I was working with a lot of houseless folks here in Chicago. There was one in particular I met who he was there absolutely by choice. I mean, he had a job, he had resources, he had friends, I mean, all kinds of stuff. And I had a number of conversations with him. He's like, yeah, this is where I choose to live. And I well, hell yeah, good for you. And it was great because it was almost funny to ask him if he needed help, which is kind of the default in that environment. I'm like, I'm here
Sure.
to, he'd be like, no, I'm good. How about you? Do you need help?
Yeah.
I'd be like, I don't know, probably, which is cool because that's the theory of
Yeah.
mutual aid, right?
That's mutual aid in action. Yeah.
That's the mutual part. But it's funny with your second part about some people. I mean, I agree with that, especially in the sort of labeling of capitalist value, so some people won't necessarily develop those skills. But I guess I'm a socialist in many ways, probably, but at least in also in the context of, oh, well, I believe in a society where or a community at least where, because I think some people really love to work and some people love to make art and some people love, and
Yeah.
if I would dream of a world where the people who like don't have quote unquote skills, like there's still value in them just to, just breathing and sort of emanating energy and being there,
Yeah.
and that we're somehow supporting that. And you could argue in some ways we are. We have social programs that provide all kinds of support. But that's where I find myself backing way out of against any conservative argument that's just like, well, everybody's gotta earn their way and everybody's gotta make a living and especially the way we've structured healthcare, where it's like, if you're not in the system, you're, well, that's weird. I don't want to say you're fucked because I've been on Medicaid on and off for years, just because the way my income's gone as an entrepreneur and a coach, and it's very hot and cold. And it's actually pretty good coverage here. So it's sort of similar with elderly care. And it's like if you're kind of in the middle and you have a decent amount of money, the system's designed to basically just drain all of it. But if you don't have any money, social programs are, in many cases, pretty decent. You have to steer through a bunch of bureaucratic crap to get to them, usually.
Well, and that's an interesting part of the either success and or failure. It's hard to tell, or it's a mix of both of the system when you're like, okay, wait a second. So if you have basically struggled hard enough to get yourself out of the bottom echelon, then you're screwed. But if you don't struggle, so then this is the problem. This is the like end of the empire stuff of like public largesse. Then it actually makes it, if you're a wise person, if you're smart enough, it actually incentivizes you not to get too, not to do too well. Like if you jump tax, I mean, we've found this, we've jumped tax brackets in the past couple of years. And I was all like, oh no. That means you take so much. Such a larger percentage of what we're making. Whereas, especially when you just jump over a bracket, you're like, wait a second, it's not worth it. Like, we'll actually make less money if we make more money. And that seems counterproductive to any, this just consider it from the village standpoint, right? If you had hundreds of people, just 100 people in your village, you don't ever want to be in a place where people are incentivized to contribute less. To the world, you know? You basically want everyone to be as productive as possible in whatever they are best suited for.
You don't,
And
that's it, right? I
not,
mean,
yeah. And we're all best suited to do nothing. I'm throwing that one off the table.
you would hope politics, if there's a point to it, it's to build incentive structures for folks to thrive, and then, as you said earlier, to provide some material safety and infrastructure and, whatnot.
And protect people from bullies, I think is probably my favorite thing what government should be for.
But I've experienced that. I mean, I've been on unemployment a couple different times, and it is, mixed with my fascination of just psychology. It's like, oh my God, like the psychology of, I can't make too much money or I'll lose my free money. That shit is real.
It's very weird. It's a
And it starts
strange thing.
governing everything,
I don't find it. I don't find it conducive to human thriving. So this is always the. This is what everyone always argue about. What's the best? What's the best for everybody? So ultimately, what's the most loving thing? Whereas I think purpose, having purpose and pursuing purpose with some degree of balanced relentlessness, is what we're made for. So then that's the hard thing when like you're like, oh, if I pursue my purpose too hard, I could accidentally profit off of it. You know? And then I'm done for.
Yeah, and it's easy, it's very easy. I slip into this, and I seem to hang out with or maybe even attract folks who, there's this real martyr symptom of, oh, I'm on purpose and I know what's best for the world and I've figured it out, and but the world is so far behind, it's not willing to pay me for this amazing genius or solution. Because capitalism is evil. And I'm trying to grow out of that, and it doesn't necessarily mean capitalism's not evil or whatever, but it does mean I'm stuck in this martyr thing where, let's just take healing, for example. It's like, capitalism has figured out a way to label and pay for all kinds of healing through all kinds of channels, Yeah, that was a note for me. I'll come back later and listen to that.
I gotta remember that. I gotta remember that. Well, yeah, and it's just I think one of the things we can do to solve a little bit of our problem is just, again, this is my bailiwick of like focusing on perfection and embracing failure and letting things be failure and smell like failure and look like failure and knowing their failure, as opposed to constantly developing systems to avoid avoid our failure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of saying like, oh, they're just not ready for me or whatever, or there's something wrong with the system, as opposed to like, well, no, you just failed. And I mean, I say this as an artist who has created products and shows and things, and I mean, so many things which didn't hit. At some point, I'm like, oh, they just don't get it. They're too
Yeah.
lazy to pay long. And they just want a 30-second something that's, it's blah, blah, blah. And some of that stuff may be true, but ultimately, I live in the world that I live in, and ultimately, it failed to find an audience. It
Right.
failed. And I learned, hopefully, you learn from the failure, but it's not, you can't. I know I can get lost in that same martyr system, you know? I'm like, oh, well, it just didn't, they just don't get it. And listen, I've had some things in my life that were taken away and didn't make financial sense in ways that just had, I was like, okay, that was completely out of my control. It wasn't even a failure. It wasn't my failure. It was a failure of a system or a failure of another person. Those things happen, certainly. And I know they can be crippling psychologically. I know they have been for me. I feel like every time it happens, it's like a, it's a psychological injury that you need rehab from, and maybe you walk with a limp, a psychological or emotional limp forever. And
Yeah.
I don't know how much, and this is a funny thing, what, just knowing how that plays out as a human being, this is why the fundamental revolution is individual. The perf revolution is often very concretely individual, in order to birth into a collective one, mind you, is that, so with all those hamstringings or big T traumas or little T traumas or whatever, I don't know how much responsibility the empire bears for that. Like, I don't know, like, what any government or any, like, is that really anybody else's responsibility to help me out of that? I actually think that's not what the empire is for, personally. But I'm again, I'm more of a small government person, so I'm like, to me, that's what community, that's what the community is for. That's what your friends are for. That's what your family is for. And I actually think we're failing on a communal level as concretely as, if not more so, than the than our empire is, than our government is.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to go see David Brooks talk tomorrow, who, often talks about weaving the social fabric back together. And somebody in my family is looking to move, and there's a co-living, co-housing development. It's a new building being built here in Oak Park that somebody told me about. That's it's getting at that. It's a very material, very, you could say playing the capitalist game. It's like condos basically, but they're saying, well, we can just design this building and root it in a philosophy and a purpose of mutual aid and co-living and sharing and caring about each other and, helping each other out and just being really clear from that at the outset. And I know that's there's a project I was involved in recently where that was my biggest lesson, was I was just not clear enough from the outset, at least about my philosophy and my sort of opinion of why this thing was born. And we drifted away from that, which is like, oh, well, go figure. So that's hopefully this is all orbiting around the question. But yeah, so in that lens, right, it's the founding documents are the purpose we're orbiting around. And in some ways still living, but in other ways, we've never fully, they're aspirational. I mean, I often hold a lot of purpose work, a lot of purpose peeps. Purpose is often aspirational. That's why it's motivational, because it keeps you moving towards the horizon. So is it, liberty and justice for all? Yeah, I mean, the question is like, well, is the empire coming to an end? And I'm also suddenly simultaneously holding this question of, is that purpose even reachable, or is that like a great purpose on the horizon for us to keep marching towards?
You want, I mean, you want, that's the thing I really like about US history, right? I mean, like, our bloodiest conflict was fought to abolish one of the greatest ills in our foundation. Well, and we were actually part of a multi, you know, a short multi-generational movement to start looking at slavery as unethical, which is new, which is pretty new in human history. And then, in pretty short order, actually, in some way, many ways, but I think the US did it, and England is noted for this as well. Spending more blood and money trying to tear down the flaw in your system, which is like, that was not wildly impractical.
Oh my God.
It's a really bad idea in terms of, like, if the actuaries were crunching the numbers. And so in some ways, I actually think that speaks, and again, that history of slavery wasn't that long ago, as we've talked about in many other contexts. So, like, in many ways, it's pretty good. We're doing pretty good as an empire
Yeah.
that would be willing to, like, slice off a hand, or slice off a thigh or whatever, in order to kind of, like, quote unquote, kind of do the right thing. People can be like, well, economically it wasn't working until they had to put brand the thing, and it was like, slavery is better as an economic system, as like for economic success. Like, if you can continue to propagate that and pay people next to nothing, it works out pretty well. I mean, we're doing versions of it in the prison system now, so it could still, and around the world, there are companies doing it around the world. There are more slaves now, supposedly, than throughout his human history. So it
We're
is
just better at
financially
hiding it. That
beneficial.
goes back to the PR thing.
Exactly. We shuffle it off over there, and kind of we profit off of someone else doing it. But in some ways, like, that actually, that's the cool thing about the foundational documents, as abolitionists pointed to, as Frederick Douglass pointed to, or whatever. It's just like, look, we're not living up to the thing that we said. So that's kind of cool. So I think that, and that's one of the reasons I think that we're in a weird place in the empire ideologically, is that for so long that was the North Star that people would point to and be like, hey, we're not doing what we said. And I think there are at least some people, there are movements of people now that are kind of like, well, even that needs to go away. Like, the Constitution itself is like too corrupted of a document, like too many slave owners, too many blah, blah, blah. Like, we somehow, like, even that is like, what do you mean? And then, but then that leaves us bereft. And again, I think some people think that's transformative, but with the chaos of enough people, it could be transformative. And if you're the most idealized, like, Pollyanna person in the world, then by all means, let's tear everything down and everything will be rebuilt perfectly. But at least, as our post-apocalyptic media output seems to suggest, most of us think it will just go really bad. Like, you have to have it actually, you have to have a higher, you have to have a higher ideal to replace that ideal. And just because we've failed to live up to it, that's, in some ways, that's a good sign that we've actually set the bar high enough that we're going to have to keep figuring it out. The liberty, justice for all part. Like, liberty always has to be limited to some degree. I know libertarians are furious at me even saying such a thing, but it has to be. Like, you can't have ultimate liberty. But justice, you're like, oh, can we get justice for all? Can we at least focus on that one? Can we do that, where everyone is treated justly? Where the poor, if the poor go into a lawsuit in the literal justice system against a wealthy person, like, will it really be the same? Is that going to be the same justice? Because I think most of us would say no. And we're looking at it now, right? With like a rich, the government's kind of seeming to go after a super rich person who is very powerful. And we're like, oh, even then, like, is that, like, whatever, the whole, everyone's now arguing whether Donald Trump, who most people hate, like, whether he's being unjustly prosecuted. You know what I mean? We're in that part of our empire. So in some ways, but we're still arguing about it and talking about it. And it's really when we just turn into the everyone shut up that it gets worse and worse, you know, that it gets intractable. But
Yeah.
I like the high ideals, man. The higher ideals, the better.
I'm definitely in the camp of, and I've said this for a few years, just I don't see a full-on burn it to the ground going well, frankly,
No.
especially for marginalized folks, because
It'll be the worst for them.
so I don't see that as the answer, and I think it's actually just respectful of our ancestors. I was just talking to my mom last night about the 20, just look at the 20th century, two world wars, Great Depression. And she's a boomer, so she was reflecting on being the generation sort of born after all of that. And we could do a whole episode on that. But I just feel like, my God, we've got it good here right now. And look, I know I'm saying that from a lot of privilege. I talk a lot about
Well,
that.
but even those not in privilege are actually doing very well, relatively speaking.
And so the idea, there's two parts coming up for me right now. One is, I don't think it's going to go well to burn it all down. And I'm also somebody who's pretty disenchanted with the empire and how we got here, and as you just named, like the things that are becoming more, even more insidious and more hidden. I mean, the prison industrial complex, I think, is the biggest blight on our empire. And the other part of that is, which you've alluded to here a little bit, is I can't even imagine this society creating another constitution anywhere near as good as the one we have. I mean, we can't, like I named, I sort of hinted at sort of challenges in very tiny micro collaborations, like literally four people. We talk all the time about what happens on social media and just people dividing up. And can you imagine what it would take for this generation to actually, or
No,
these generations to create it?
it sounds wonderful. Well, and keeping in mind, a lot of people were like 20 something years old. Alexander Hamilton was like 22 or something. You know what I mean? Can you imagine that? A bunch of 20-year-olds? I actually used to think I think we're too dumb. I think we're stupider in general, like right now than we were then. And I don't think our capacity for debate. I think this is why I've sent you so many different clips of like how debate has fallen apart in this country. I was like, I don't think we have the tools. Like we need to regrow the tools to even have to really have that kind of a conversation. I mean, we can do
If
it in an algorithmic way. We can do it as like a pure democracy way, but I don't really think that's ever the best way to compose anything.
yeah, and we in my experience, almost anything that is designed by committee ends up getting diluted to the most milquetoast version of it. And the last thing before we move to close, I don't think you sent this, but I saw this really hilarious video. I could try to find it. And this guy's just, it's a selfie video, and he's just like, yeah, I don't see civil war. We're the like Netflix, like order dinner from Uber Eats generation. Like we're not, maybe we join a protest once in a while, but we're not taking up arms and like fighting our name, And again, maybe that's naive because there certainly are people. There's all kinds of people everywhere. So yeah, there's certainly people who have stockpiles of weapons and would be happy to.
No, in our case, the government really have to start it. And I think at this point, I'm actually kind of shocked that they haven't. It hasn't. And I think in some ways, the riots of 2020 and January 6th and the protests going on now and the anti-lockdown protests and whatever the trucker convoy and blah, blah, blah. We're seeing the amount of like big protests we've seen in the past 10 years outstrips anything I've seen in my lifetime. So it's happening in terms of like we're being that provoked by what the government is up to. But they're gonna have to, yeah, I think we're far too, I don't see a radical revolutionary coming along and like sp sparking it. I think the government will eventually push people too far. But at this point, if they haven't already, like with what Biden got up to and with internet censorship, I mean, that was like, I think one of the biggest stories I've ever seen in my lifetime. And I feel like most people like don't even care. And a lot of people think it's fine. So I think actually, I think a massive amount of the population would join the government and fight the people. But yeah, no, I think we've got enough lazy people that's what it'll take. And I think most of the people I know who are like genuinely ready for like a sustained existence separate from the government and ready to combat them if necessary are much more libertarian, leave me alone people. And so they're not like building revolutionary models. They're just like, cool, I'm going to learn how to farm. I'm going to leave. I'm going to learn how to garden, farm, raise animals, slaughter them, shoot a gun, shoot bows and arrows, learn how to use horses, learn how to fix cars. I'm going to just go become a, we're going to go do a bunch of self-sustaining villages. And it's going to take kind of another, it's going to take a non-wacko, Waco type situation. I think that's the most likely thing that would actually spark a genuine revolution. Like the government would come in and like, if we get another Kent state in the next couple of months, that could increase the damage. Or if someone builds a nice enough complex co-living space where they don't need the government so much and they kind of are sick of them telling them what to do, and the government comes in and pulls a Waco, and then we could see things shift a little bit. Well, then we could see. But until then.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, like don't know if they're being called sit-ins, but the encampments at all these universities for Palestine. I'm talking to folks who lived through Vietnam, and they're just like, I haven't seen this kind of organized student protest since Vietnam. And So I
Yeah, position
agree with
shooting.
you.
Yeah, we had the most mat. I don't know if everyone remembers, but like during the Iraq War, right before the Iraq War, like launched worldwide, it was the largest worldwide protest movement in human history, and we ignored that. And I remember after that happened, I was like, "Oh, dude, that's bad." Like you can basically have the biggest protest movement ever, and the government goes, "Yeah, we're still doing it." I was like, at that point, I was like, any protest movement, I'm like, all right, well. I feel that I understand you have the need to say something, and we have to say something, and you can kind of move the needle little bits and pieces. And I think some of the farmer movements have been effective in Europe, where they just like are literally shutting down infrastructure. But these student movements aren't. I mean, I don't mean this to be mean. I mean, big ups to you if you're going to be like, hey, we need to draw attention to war being disgusting. Do it, do it. I'm not saying stop doing it, but the likelihood of it being effective is almost none. But we're in a notable season though. I feel like this is the funny thing about being so distracted is again, people lack purpose. And this, all these, every single thing, anti-lockdown, BLM, January 6th, anti-war, Gaza war, whatever, all of it is people desperately seeking purpose and change in their own lives. And as so often happens, when you can't figure out how to do that, you point at things outward, outside you. And hopefully the things you're pointing outward actually have resonance with your own internal problems, you know? So is the US empire crumbling or doomed to fail? The bigger question is, am I doomed to fail?
I really resonate with that last part, and also totally support and participate in protests. And yeah, it's not the highest form of purpose to be outwardly motivated solely in response to something, right?
Yes.
There's
Yeah. So anti something. But at the same time, keep it up, y'all.
go.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're gonna do something new format, given this interesting article that Brendan found, The Seven Signs of an Empire's End by Ernest Richard Rugenstein, PhD. So we're going to do a speed round and vote for the seven signs, yay or nay, and that will sort of
Yeah. Whether it's happened,
maybe lead to
yay
our
meaning yes, this is happening right now.
yes, yay, yay. So I was just at the Gene Siskel Centers the other day
Yep, there you
at
go.
the Chicago Palestine Film Festival. So we'll do a
There you
thumbs
go.
up, thumbs
Yeah.
down sort of scenario. So first, they become fixated on some form of ideology or mix of ideologies.
That's a medium thumbs up on that one. I feel like, yeah, I feel like a medium. That's like a half thumbs up, but for me. What about you? You got to say it out loud.
Oh yeah, you're right. I'm a thumbs up on that one.
Okay. Yep.
But
I can
yeah,
see it.
like you're a thumbs sideways,
I'm a thumb sideways. It's, yeah.
which is a non committed thumbs up.
It's a non-committed yes. This is happening. Is it fixated? I think we're mostly apathetic.
And to be specific, I'm going to go with the mix of ideologies. There's absolutely no way
Yes.
we're fixated on one ideology.
No, not at all. Okay.
Okay, second is the superiority of amusement.
Oh yeah, this is like the bread and circuses sort of thing. Yes, absolutely. I'm fat, biggest thumbs up possible for
I'm a
that.
huge
Yeah,
thumbs up
we're
there.
obsessed with the we are deeply obsessed with entertainment.
Third, government corruption.
I would say yes. I think our government's like ineffectual enough to not be so corrupt that I'm like in comparing us to other nations, we're doing okay. You know what I mean? Like it's still a scandal here when payola is revealed, whereas there are many other countries where you're like payola is like pay for play is pretty typical. So I would say yeah, that's like again a medium. That's a more solid thumbs up than the first one, but I would say it's a gentle thumbs up for me.
My notation is like capital Y, lowercase y.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Lowercase y.
Yeah, I'm a capital Y to that one.
Okay.
Fourth, degrading public health.
Yeah, I'm gonna do a thumbs up on that one.
Yeah, me too. That's pretty evidenced. Seems related. The fifth
Yeah.
could be considered nutritional challenges and stratification.
Sort of. I don't know if that factors in as much. I actually think we are. It's hard to say if that's empire. Is that just going on? Yes. That's just happening. Is that due to the empire in this case? I don't know. The stratification element, less so, but the nutritional challenges, yes. Thumbs up.
Number six, overexpansion along with jingoism or even nationalism.
No. I'm a thumbs down on that one. I mean, it's a gentle thumbs down, but I'm gonna say no. We're actually not. I think we've struggled to be nationalistic at this point. I think we're almost like anti-nationalist as like a and as a pop sentiment here.
Yeah, I think that requires a bit more noodling. I'm gonna join you in the gentle thumbs down for now.
Yeah.
The last and seventh sign is the constant feeling of perpetual external warfare against the nation state.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm a thumbs up on that one.
Yeah, I'm a little thumbs up. I want to noodle on that one a bit more too. So, that's six out of seven with enough thumbs up to give us a yes, and then one with gentle thumbs down. So that's a pretty significant
Yeah.
majority pointing to yes, the empire
It
is in.
is. The trajectory is there.
So I would say grab your party hats. Let's just, go out.
And I would say do your best to form communities, more expansive communities than in the past. Focus actually long term on like if you could build a 500 or less, I would almost like a 200 to 300 community, knowing that children will be born. Learn how to plant, learn how to grow, learn how to shoot a bow and arrow, learn how to shoot a gun. Learn how to ride horses or other animals. Yeah, learn how to grow food, learn how to purify water.
Okay, I'll give a real answer. Fine. Wholeheartedly, take care of your community, take care of the life around you, take care of yourself, and
Yeah.
go as deep as you need to go to really tend to the troubled areas of life, and particularly relationships. And I feel like the more fragmented our relationships are, especially our most intimate ones, or even just the more sort of numb they are,
Yeah.
the more likely all of this is to happen and scale.
Indeed. Well, thank you for being in community and relationship with me, even across hundreds of miles.
You're welcome. Thank you as well. I love you
Love
and
you, Andy.
see you soon. Bye.